Oh, thank you very much. Thank you to the committee for the opportunity to present some information here today on the Federal Pest Management Regulatory Agency and Federal Pesticide Regulation in Canada. My name is Lindsay Hansen, and I work for the agency in Ottawa. I do have a number of slides, and I'm going to go through them quite quickly, but hopefully we'll have an opportunity, if you have questions later, to answer any questions you have on any of the slides. The purpose here today is to provide an overview of how pesticides are approved for use in Canada and the science that forms the basis of those decisions. The things I want to touch on today is the federal legislation for pesticide regulation in Canada, the overview of the scientific review process that we do use, and some of the other initiatives that we do have that go towards further reduction of risk with regards to the use of pesticides in Canada. First of all, we start off with a definition. What is a pesticide? A pesticide directly or indirectly controls, destroys, attracts, or repels a pest, or mitigates or prevents an injurious, noxious, or troublesome effect. And some of the more traditional pesticides that you're probably familiar with, the herbicides, insecticides, and fungicides, are found under the categorization of pesticide. Some of the products you may not think about as being a pesticide are some of those things such as swimming pool chemicals, some of the rodenticides, flea and tick products, insect repellents themselves, the products that you use for mosquitoes as well. Health Canada's Pest Management Regulatory Agency, our priority under Health Canada, is to maintain and improve the health and safety of Canadians. With regards to pesticides, this includes the food crop uses of pesticides, as well as situations where there are non-food use exposure scenarios. The same priority is applied when approving all pesticides for use in Canada. So it doesn't matter if the product is being registered for use on a food crop, say the products that people use in rural Alberta with regards to grain production, or the products that are used in the city by a homeowner when they're controlling a broadleaf weed in their lawn. The same process is used for all of those products in Canada. Our federal responsibilities include to regulate all pest control products imported into, sold, or used in Canada under the Pest Control Products Act. The main component of this is our pre-market review, and this is the stringent science-based evaluation, which is the majority of the work that we do in Ottawa. We also have post-registration oversight. This looks at compliance activities, monitoring and surveillance, incident reporting, and sales data reporting. We also, as part of the new Act, have a requirement for a re-evaluation, that is a scientific reassessment of that product on a 15-year cycle. The legislative authority for the Pest Control Products Act is a very recent act, dates to 2006. Primary objective under the Pest Control Products Act is to prevent unacceptable risks to people and the environment from the use of pest control products. It also enables users access to pest management tools, those being the pest control products themselves, and also sustainable pest management strategies. Health Canada's new Pest Control Products Act came into force June 28, 2006. Some of the fundamental changes that you will find in that fairly recent act is that it strengthened the health and environmental protection of citizens. Some of the existing practices that were already being used in the approval process are now set into law, that being public consultation, taking into account sensitive subpopulations in our reviews, and also the use of aggregate and cumulative exposure scenarios. It also allows more transparency to the registration system. It also strengthens post-registration controls on pesticides, that being mandatory incident reporting, re-evaluation, and increased fines. This slide just gives you some picture of the distribution of legislative responsibilities when it comes to pesticides in Canada. Under the federal system, we of course look at new pesticide registration and the re-evaluation process. We have responsibility for the science-based health, value, and environmental assessments. We also have responsibility for compliance and enforcement, and also sustainable strategies, whether that being in the food crop sector or in the non-food use of pesticides. Under the provincial responsibilities, transportation, sale, use, storage, and disposal, training and certification and licensing, and also further conditions on the use and in accordance with federal standards. Under the municipal, we see the possibility of bylaws for further conditions on use where the authority exists and in accordance with federal standards. This slide is just to talk a little bit about what it takes to register a pesticide in Canada, the scientific studies that are a requirement for every pesticide that is proposed for registration. There is a requirement for over 200 scientific studies that are necessary to register a pesticide in Canada. Under the health assessment, we have studies that look at toxicology. That's to define the hazard. What are the possible effects caused by that chemical? We also look at epidemiology information, if it's available. Another major component of those studies, occupational and bystander exposure. This forms a very key component. The exposure component allows us to determine what is the risk of using that pesticide. We also look at dietary exposure in situations where a product is used on a food crop. What is the potential for that pesticide to end up in the diet? We also look at the same types of studies under environmental assessment for environmental toxicology, environmental chemistry, and fate. And that's to look at these pesticides and how they behave in the environment. Where do they end up in the environment? How are they broken down? What may be their potential impacts on local plants and animals when that product is used? We also have a component that looks at the value assessment of those pesticides. The efficacy. Does that pesticide actually do what it says on the label? We also look at competitiveness and sustainability of that product when it's registered in Canada. This slide is somewhat difficult to see and is a little bit out of date, but when we looked at the number of studies that are used to register a pesticide in Canada, when my colleagues back in Ottawa are doing their evaluation, those are 6-inch binders that basically are the data for one particular chemical for the registration, and there is a requirement for us to evaluate that data, cross-reference it, make sure that that data is up to date, and defines the studies that were submitted for registration of a chemical. Where do those studies come from? The onus certainly is on the applicant to submit all the required studies, and those are those 200 studies that I talked about. The individual studies within a submission are often conducted by different independent laboratories. Studies must follow internationally developed and validated test guidelines for study protocols that adhere to the principles of good laboratory practice. Now, that's a key component in that the studies that are required by Health Canada, those are the same types of studies that are required by all of the major international regulatory agencies, such as the Environmental Protection Agency, those agencies as well as found in the European Union, and also other countries such as Australia and New Zealand. The extensive data reporting allows Health Canada scientists to conduct independent analyses of the raw data, and that's what my colleagues back in Ottawa are doing. We also look at published scientific literature. Most of that you would find typically post-registration for a pesticide. I touched on this briefly earlier. What this does is show how we do arrive at a registration of a product in looking at the hazard. What are the hazards and at what doses? That gives you kind of the toxicity profile of a particular chemical. What is the dose where there are no effects? We have to be able to determine that. We also apply uncertainty factors when we determine that dose. This allows us to establish an acceptable level of human exposure. On the exposure side of the equation, what activities create exposure? How is that product being used? What is the potential for a person to be exposed when it is used? By what route does that person possibly be exposed? Is it through the diet, through skin, or through inhalation? How much is the exposure? And we have to be able to quantify what is that particular exposure when the product is used according to label. This allows us to determine what is the risk and compare that to the exposure to an acceptable level. This allows us to then arrive, are those risks acceptable? We approve only those uses that meet these Health Canada standards in Canada. What is acceptable risk? That is defined in the Pest Control Products Act. Acceptable risk is reasonable certainty of no harm to health, future generations, and the environment from use or exposure when used according to label directions, and that is defined in the Pest Control Products Act. This again just talks about the determination of the risk of that particular chemical. Most substances have the potential to cause an adverse effect at high enough doses, but there's usually a lower dose where no harmful effects will occur. Generally, as the amount of exposure increases, so does the risk of a toxic effect. Health risk assessment puts a strong emphasis on determining both the amount and the duration of people's exposures, including sensitive populations. The types of hazards that we do look for when a product is registered are the acute effects. That would be the effects from a single high dose, being oral dermal inhalation. We also look at eye and skin irritation from a particular chemical and possible allergic reactions. We look at short-term studies as well. We also look for reproductive effects. Those are done over two generations, and typically these are done in animal studies. We also look for birth defects. We also look for the potential for that chemical to cause neurotoxicity. We also have a requirement for long-term studies, and these are lifetime exposures. Typically, these are done in rats and mice. And this is in order to determine cancer potential over a lifetime, including the genotoxic potential of that particular chemical. We would also examine any available epidemiological information in conjunction with those toxicity findings. Why do we use animal toxicity studies? A range of doses are necessary or tested to cause toxic effects in order to understand which levels are non-toxic. This allows us to compare effects across different mammalian species for consistency and to identify which species are most sensitive. A non-toxic level in the most sensitive species is the basis of setting that acceptable level for human exposure. The acceptable level of exposure is at least 100 times lower than the non-toxic dose. How do we assess cancer potential? The cancer studies themselves are done in two mammalian species, and that allows for daily exposure over the lifetime of that animal. These cancer studies examine all the organ systems. They do clinical chemistry, blood and urinary testing, tissue pathology, and clinical symptoms. We also run analyze a series of in vivo and in vitro mutagenicity tests. That's the ability of that chemical to cause effects on the DNA. We look for precancerous lesions in other animal studies. We examine the available metabolic and mechanistic studies to better understand how a chemical behaves in the body and causes its effect. We check for similarities with other known chemicals. We also look at the epidemiology studies if they exist for that particular chemical. In terms of determining the exposure, we look at dietary studies, specific studies that show how much pesticide may be present in the treated crops, in the drinking water, or may be transferred to meat, milk, or eggs. On the non-dietary exposure side of the equation, specific studies that look out how the pesticide residue can be transferred to people, including children, when they do certain activities, that being farmers in their fields, homeowners using a product, or actually children playing on treated grass. Health Canada determines the amount Canadians may be exposed to through diet and other activities. These potential exposure levels are determined for various sensitive populations and age groups, including infants, toddlers, children, adolescents, and adults. A potential exposure is overestimated for their protection. And again, Health Canada registers only those products where human exposures are well below a level that is non-toxic, at least 100-fold lower. This just provides a summary of our scientific approach that we use. We have a large number of in-house scientists back at the agency in Ottawa. There are about 350 people with scientific degrees that work in these various areas with regards to toxicology, environmental effects, and agriculture. We also rely, there's a strong alliance on a comprehensive body of scientific evidence, and those are the studies that I talked about, and scientific methods that examine both hazard and exposure. This process that we use is consistent with the approach of international regulatory bodies, and I touched on the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the European Union, the World Health Organization. This is the process that has been developed and is used by those countries in registering pesticides across in the world. Science is certainly the basis of all Health Canada regulatory decisions for pesticides, and the approach is precautionary. What about older products that are on the market? We do have a requirement under the Pest Control Products Act for the re-evaluation program. In 2000, we committed to review 401 pesticide active ingredients that were registered prior to 1995. 92% have been addressed as of this past September. Re-evaluation follows a 15-year cycle when a given pesticide is first registered. Other programs that we have for risk reduction, we have programs that look at biopesticides, programs that look at non-conventional products. Many programs involve international collaboration and sharing of scientific expertise. We work to establish the lowest effective rate to keep usage to a minimum amount necessary, and that's the rate of use that you would find on a pesticide label. That's established as the lowest amount that so the product would be effective. We also have label improvement programs to update mitigation measures, mitigation being where the product is being used. Should the person be wearing gloves? Should they be wearing full clothed to reduce their exposure? We also have compliance activities that promote best practices. We also have the mandatory incident reporting program that will help identify areas that require follow-up. So if there's a problem, if something is being seen in the actual use of that product, if that incident is reported and is reported to the manufacturer is required by law to report that information to us. In summary, pesticides are certainly among the most rigorously tested substances in the world. Health Canada's scientific review process ensures that pesticides approved for use in Canada can be used safely when label directions are followed. Health Canada is actively involved in various initiatives to provide Canadians with access to newer and lower risk pesticides. All pesticides registered in Canada for agricultural, forestry, structural, and lawn and garden use must meet all the same stringent health and safety standards. Health Canada approves only those pesticides that show no increase to health risk, including cancer. We do put out reminders. We like to talk to people about how to use those products if they choose to use them. If you do use them judiciously and only for their intended use. Carefully follow label directions and take measures to become better informed about their safe and effective use. To prevent accidents, always store pesticides safely in the original clearly marked containers and out of the reach of children. If you have a pest problem, take measures to become better informed about various control options, including pest prevention. This is contact information for the agency. We do have a 1-800 number. If you do have a question, I will try and answer them today, possibly in a few minutes. But if you have other questions that we need to follow up on, you can call that number, and we will certainly have a person get back to you. Thank you.